Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The KNIPA Interfaith Lecture will take place virtually this year, featuring Oklahoma native, the Reverend Dr. Serene Jones, president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. She's the first woman to head that 182-year-old institution. Jones grew up in Enid, where her father taught at and eventually led the Phillips Theological Seminary there. She graduated from the University of Oklahoma, and prior to joining Union, taught at Yale University for 17 years, where she was the Titus Street Professor of Theology at the Divinity School and chair of the university's program in Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies. She's the author of several books and numerous edited pieces, including Trauma and Grace and her most recent, Call It Grace, Finding Meaning in a Fractured World, which combines a memoir of how her theology was shaped by her home state and its dynamics concerning race, religion, and family, and her work in justice and ethics. She'll be speaking Sunday at 4 p.m. on Facebook Live on Trauma and Grace in Oklahoma History. You can access the lecture on the KNIPA lecture page. And by the way, that's spelled K-N-I-P-P-A. Dr. Serene Jones is my guest today. Reverend Dr. Serene Jones, welcome to Oklahoma virtually, back to Oklahoma virtually, and thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to be talking with you today.
Rick. Yes. Now, I understand that when you give the KNIPA Interfaith Lecture, you're going to be talking somewhat about growing up in Oklahoma. It's a big part of your book, Call It Grace, and how your spiritual foundation was set. What is important to know about that?
Well, I think that one of the reasons why they were interested in me giving this lecture is that I not only come to the topic of faith and the world we're living in today from a general perspective, but I am a child of the Oklahoma Plains. My great-grandparents were homesteaders. My grandparents, parents, cousins, and myself all went to the University of Oklahoma. And I graduated from high school in Enid, and I still consider, even though I've been living in New York City for 13 years, I still consider myself an Okie through and through. And because it's so much those formative years, those early years of your life where things like your faith and your worldview are shaped, and those were shaped on those plains.
So you got some red dirt under your fingernails is what you're saying.
Yes. I got a lot of red dirt there.
Well, let's talk about the spiritual foundation, because as you well know, Oklahoma is a place of contrast. And spiritually, I mean, you can run the gamut, but fundamentalism is a big part of this state's heritage. And here you are, the leader of one of the major theological progressive Christianity seminaries. How did that foundation take root?
Well, growing up in Oklahoma, I was, along with my whole family and extended grandparents, great-grandparents, the whole Jones crew, grew up in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ. And my theology was basically shaped at church camp. And it was a profound but simple theology that affirmed that God loves everyone, all of creation equally, and that the task of being a person of faith is to respond to that love, which I call grace, by living a life in which you seek justice and love in all of your interactions and seek to build a more just and loving world. So I grew up with a very Oklahoma-grounded faith community, but a very big vision of what it means to be a child of God and a Christian. And I think it's important, I'll just add this, to note that what we see now in Oklahoma as an abundance of fundamentalism and conservative Christianity has not always been the case. That even in the, and you saw it strongly in the 20s and 30s, but even into the 50s and 60s, you had members of the Southern Baptist Convention, for instance, who were liberal registered Democrats. and who were pursuing a progressive politics alongside their Baptist faith. So what we see today is not necessarily what Oklahoma has been throughout its history.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you'll also be doing is reflecting on the upcoming 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre. And I imagine that, like many white Oklahomans, this was not a story you knew growing up. And, you know, it's interesting that as we are dealing with the commemoration coming up, this is a story that is where the reckoning is ongoing and still a struggle in many communities.
Yes, it's absolutely a struggle. It's a struggle in Tulsa. It's a struggle for Oklahoma. It's a struggle for our nation. And yes, I grew up in a very liberal nuclear family. My father was a professor and then a dean and a president of a university. But even in that liberal context, it wasn't until I was in college in the early 80s that I heard about the Tulsa Race Massacre for the first time. My family, who loved to tell Oklahoma history, had never shared this story, which it was in and of itself astonishing to me that something of this magnitude of horror and significance historically had simply left the screen of Oklahoma history. Learning about it in college then set me on a path of learning more about the long history of white supremacy and its legacy of Jim Crow in Oklahoma, and how that happened in churches, and also how do we reckon with that history today in this moment.
It's interesting, you know, I think it's an experience many of us have shared. I was lucky enough to have a high school teacher that mentioned it, but he didn't spend a whole lot of time on it. And it was, you know, as part of the Oklahoma history, that was not the Oklahoma history you taught. You didn't learn about stories about like the Osage Reign of Terror or the race massacre. It was something, if it was mentioned at all, it was glossed over. And yet, these stories still have tremendous impact on us, and how we deal with them moving forward really determines our future as a shared people.
Yes, absolutely. As President Biden said at the COVID ceremony last Tuesday, honoring those who have passed, we can't move forward until we remember. And remembering is hard. And it's a reckoning. And it's coming face to face with the legacies of the wounds and the traumas of the past that we've inherited and that still lives with us.
How are you trying to deal with this reckoning in your own congregations, in your own, you know, within the seminary, but within the greater seminary of the people that are talking about this? As I look at it right now, you focus a lot on grace, and there's a lot of grace needed in the two major issues confronting Americans today. That's, you know, the loss and fear we're all experiencing as a part of the pandemic, and this knowledge as we finally, belatedly, confront our racial history.
Yes, and this is why grace matters, because if you have a profound sense that you and everyone are loved by God, period, and that you are precious to God, and the whole world is equalized by the divine reality of that love, there's nothing that can happen that can undo that love. I think out of that comes courage to face the hard things. And for me, as a white person that has been facing the legacy of white supremacy in my own family and in Oklahoma history, and then the different ways that it continues to live in churches across the country and in seminaries. You don't have 400 years of chattel slavery, Jim Crow, and the new Jim Crow, and ongoing systemic racism without having extremely deep wounds and a story about who white people are that is deep in the bones of whiteness in this country. And because I'm white, I have really chosen to talk to white people about coming to grips with their past and how they move forward.
One of the things that's very difficult is, you know, how do you heal that wound when there's a good part of the nation that says, put a bandage on it and move on?
Yeah, well, there's a good part of the nation that also says, so what, when it comes to these wounds? Don't even put a bandage on it.
Well, that's true. I was being charitable.
You've got the so whaters, and then you've got the put a bandaid onders, and neither one of those works. And until we have a reckoning nationally and personally with this legacy, it is the biggest threat to our democracy, as we've seen in recent days, but we have continued to see throughout our history. It's a festering wound, and until it is tended and healed, it threatens the whole body. And we really, and if we want to survive and thrive as a democracy, we don't have a choice. This is something we have to do.
My guest today is the Reverend Dr. Serene Jones, native Oklahoma, but now the president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. She's the author of several books. Our most recent is Call It Grace, Finding Meaning in a Fractured World. The Oklahoma Native will come back virtually to give the KNIPA Interfaith Lecture on Facebook Live this Sunday at 4, and you can learn more on the KNIPA Interfaith Facebook page. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, in your book, Call It Grace, Finding Meaning in a Fractured World, you go through a whole set of sections in finding grace. And one of those issues is in finding forgiveness. Before we talk about that, I've read that you have four foundations of your theology, and I find it interesting that you say theology as opposed to religion. I think most people use those interchangeably, and you use theology with intention. But you talk about the importance of struggling for justice, the beauty of mercy, and the ultimate power of love. But the first foundation is the necessity of our interconnected breath. I thought it would be interesting to explore that. What do you mean by the necessity of our interconnected breath?
Yes, that is perhaps the most profound thing that grace allows us to see, and it is the fact that as human creatures living on this earth, that in all that we do and all that we are, we are deeply interconnected at a biological level, at a social level, at a cultural level. And what one part of the body does affects the whole. This has huge consequences for how we think about our relationship to the earth, but also how we think about our relationship to each other. We all breathe the same air, and that air is the air that we depend upon to sustain us. And it's air coming in and out of my lungs, is going into your lungs and out of your breathing, out of your lungs. And I use the image of breath because it makes the point of how our lives are woven together, even when we refuse to see it. To be interconnected doesn't mean you necessarily have to recognize those interconnections. It's just the fact of our existence, that we are interconnected deeply, and hence our lives are interdependent.
Well, it seems like it is a fact that we are interconnected, but right now the ties that bind seem to be very frayed. And I think there's a large part of our community where we just don't feel connected to. How do we reforge those ties?
That is the question of the hour, of the day, of the centuries. That is the question of our nation. And I don't pretend to have a simple answer to that, because the depth of the divide is profound and it's been longstanding. And we are interconnected, but in our imaginations, and in our self-concept, we don't see that. We see ourselves as separate and divided by our ideology, and stepping across the boundaries that we put around ourselves to reach out to those we disagree with or those whose lives are so profoundly different from our own takes an extreme act of courage, and it requires, I use the word mercy often instead of the word forgiveness, because I think forgiveness sometimes gets used as a cheap word by the people who want to put a Band-Aid on things, or don't want to really do them well. Can't we just forgive each other and move on? But I use the word mercy because mercy refers to the love of God and the ultimate forgiveness of God of all that we are and that we do. And if you can remember that in God we are one and we are equally loved, then that person that I personally can't stand to be around, much less have a discussion with, much less talk about the important issues with, I have to remember that in the mercy and love of God, they are precious and beloved. And it may not create the conversation, but it also, even though it doesn't necessarily make the connections, it stops me from being able to completely throw up my hands and walk away from that divide.
We also think of forgiveness, though, as a personal act. And the way you're talking about mercy is more of an act between Creator and human and each other. Can mercy be a personal act as well?
I think, yes, I absolutely do. I think that when one has a merciful heart, then you can even approach those for whom you find it completely impossible to conjure up something like forgiveness, because forgiveness requires repentance. It requires changing the way you look at things. It requires fixing the problem that made the breach in the first place. Forgiveness is complicated, but if you can approach with mercy, you approach with the hope that forgiveness is possible, and you approach with the knowledge that ultimately love conquers all. And by that I mean, in the vast big story of our human life on earth, the ultimate truth about us is love, even when we fail to love.
You know, it's interesting the way you describe it. It sounds like mercy is a way station to forgiveness.
It can be. It can be a starting point, and it can be also the place that you get to when forgiveness is impossible or seems impossible.
Can I ask you, can you share some of the personal things you've done to break down boundaries that, you know, inevitably we all have in finding shared connection with others, especially in this highly polarized ideological time?
Writing the book, Call It Grace, it's a set of chapters that goes through significant events in my life, and I reflect on them theologically.
Yeah, a series of stations, as you referred to them.
Stations. And one of those, when it comes to, for instance, white supremacy, breaking down and breaking through barriers for me has required that I stop seeing white supremacy as something that other white people have, and that my own white liberal self has somehow, you know, been cleansed of. But I look at my own family history and see it is there and has long been alive in the story of my family in Oklahoma. And it's something that is in the marrow of my bones as a person who, because of her whiteness, has been afforded a level of success that would not have been available to me had I grown up African American in a small town in Oklahoma.
Or American Indian. You know, I mean, you talked about how both of your great-grandparents came to Oklahoma probably in land runs, and my family was the same, and it's something I think about a lot, is that land belonged to somebody else before government forcibly took it away? And it's something that it's easy to put aside and something to be proud of, and at the same time, there's this other side of that story that needs reckoning.
Absolutely. The story that I grew up with about my great-grandparents being on the land run, they homesteaded land outside of Billings, Oklahoma, which we still have in our family. And I never once heard anyone talk about that being formerly Osage land. It was empty land.
Yes.
And nobody owned it. And that story has been completely eclipsed by a story of pride and turning prairie into wheat fields. And that's another Oklahoma story that needs to be retold and the truth spoken. I did grow up learning about the Trail of Tears, but apart from that, I did not grow up knowing anything about the different tribal communities that were on the land that eventually became Oklahoma long before that. That was completely taken out of the story.
My guest today is the Reverend Dr. Serene Jones, Oklahoma native and now president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. She'll be giving the Canipa Interfaith Lecture this Sunday at 4 o'clock. It will be a virtual event on Facebook Live. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. She's the author of numerous books, articles, interviews. Her most recent book is titled Call It Grace, Finding Meaning in a Fractured World, which talks about the foundations of her theology, and also it's part memoir of what she learned growing up in Oklahoma. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. I'd like to focus on some excerpts I read of a sermon you gave just a couple of weeks ago. It was in the wake of the assault on the Capitol, and about how we need to balance justice and grace in the wake of this huge political divide. Can you share some of those thoughts of balancing justice and grace, and how that maybe can be the start of, as we've talked about the metaphor of tying and binding together, how can that be the start of that?
Yes, in that sermon, I was just honestly grappling with the fact that, as I put it, I have two Christians inside of me that are at war with one another. And one Christian side of me watched as the Capitol was attacked and felt utter horror and was astonished and had a profound sense of the grave injustice and threat to our democracy, and wanted and still want there to be accountability, justice, the righting of wrongs, the looking at the dynamics that led to that in a very serious way. The other Christian part of me was looking at the people who were storming the Capitol, and, you know, one of them looked like my aunt. Another one looked like a member of my congregation. These are people I know and I love and I've grown up with. They're not foreign to me. And so, you know, the desire to love them and to feel the despair that must drive them and the anger that must have driven them to do that is also strong in me. This part that feels mercy and love and forgiveness. And in my sermon, I say what I believe to be the truth about the Christian message, and that is we don't get off the hook. We're stuck with both warring Christians inside of us. We must always seek justice and never step back from that. At the same time, we have hearts that are open through grace to see our interconnections and love. And we have to live in that tension, and it's sometimes miserable, but that is what it means to to live a Christian life.
So you can't reconcile those two forces. You just have to live with, as you said, the tension.
Yes. The tension is the lives we lead. That is the reality of them. And we don't like it when we can't fix things, figure it all out and tie it up with a bow. But that we have to live with deep tensions that have an impact on us day to day.
My guest today is the Reverend Dr. Serene Jones, president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. Tell us a little about the Union Theological Seminary, a Disciples of Christ seminary?
No. Union is an almost 200-year-old seminary in New York City. It was started by a group of pastors who left New Haven and Princeton and came to New York and set up on the docks of what's now downtown New York, because they thought that you couldn't learn to be a pastor in the quiet of the countryside, but you needed to be in the middle of all of the controversies and teeming dynamics of the day. And the school has been, since its inception, very progressive, very socially involved, and has produced over the years some of the most outspoken public theological voices in the history of our nation, including the Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the theologian who returned to Germany, and or Paul Tillich, Reinhold Niebuhr, James Cone, the founder of Black theology.
Yeah, these were great dissenters against fascism and unbridled power.
Yes, yes. And those are the students that we're still here forming to be deeply faithful, deeply critical, and deeply engaged in all that they do. I think I have the best job in the world. It's such an amazing place.
Well, we look forward to hearing you give the KNIPA Interfaith Lecture. Again, it will be virtual, Facebook Live. You can watch from your own home Sunday at 4. Dr. Jones, thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, thank you so much for great questions and for the conversation.
The Reverend Dr. Serene Jones speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She's the president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. She'll be giving the KNIPA Interfaith Lecture in a virtual presentation this Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on Facebook Live. She'll be speaking on Trauma and Grace in Oklahoma History. You can learn more about the lecture on the KNIPA Interfaith Lecture page on Facebook, and that's the way to view the lecture. By the way, KNIPA is spelled K-N-I-P-P-A. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.